I just love hearing the fight song again. Doesn't even feel like last season happened.
It was, I always went to almost all the ASU games. Yeah. Last year was a little bit different, obviously, with COVID and the lack of games. But, I was getting there super early, like 3 hours before, so you wouldn't have to deal with parking and all the issues. Eating by far the worst meal of any place you could get. That was always the worst meal. The media meal at ASU?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The overcooked hot dogs.
Overcooked hot dogs and some kind of sloppy Joe with cheese on it. Like
love for the ASU staff, though, but...
Yeah, the meals were... Yeah. I just stop on my way in. But it was always great to go to the ASU game. So this is a big one tonight for them to get the season started. Not the game itself. They're going to clobber Southern Utah, which just played yesterday. No,
they're playing right now.
Yeah, they played on Saturday... against San Jose State, and they got beat by 45-14. Mm-hmm. And their turnaround is Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. 5 days later, they got to go play ASU, a Pac-12 favorite, one of the favorites in the Pac-12. So that's going to be really difficult for them in such a short turnaround to go play that game.
ASU favored by 45 points, as we learned yesterday.
Maybe they win it by 45. You know, here's the thing. Herm doesn't like to run up scores, so I would bet against them covering 45 because that's not Herm. But, when you get ahead by a lot, you don't throw the ball. Like when they beat the hell out of U of A last year. Sorry to bring this up again, everybody.
I'm enjoying it.
Especially Sarah. They only threw the ball twice in the second half. They threw the ball twice. Yep. Like, Herm's not going to be throwing the ball down the field when they're up by five scores in the third quarter. But you can't stop a kid from running. You're not going to say a kid, hey, run for 3 yards and then fall down. You're not going to tell those kids. You're going to hand the ball off. And you're going to tell them, hey, we're handing the ball off. If you can't stop that, then I can't stop the score from being run up.
You're not going to stop the defense from potentially forcing turnovers, too. I mean, I don't know if Southern Utah is just throwing the ball up for grabs because they're down by 28 or something. I mean, ASU should absolutely cruise.
You might not be bringing the all-out blitzes and things like that on defense.
No.
But one of the things that we've talked so much of getting ready for this ASU season, and I think it'll be a special season. I'll be very disappointed if it's not. Just the experience level on that defense is just phenomenal. Let's just start in the secondary. Chase Lucas, sixth year.
Yes.
Yeah. Was Chase Lucas here when Jake Plummer was here?
He helped recruit Jake Plummer, actually.
Was he here? Yeah. Did he help recruit him?
He was his recruiting host.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was Jake the host for Chase?
No, Chase was Jake's host.
He was Jake Plummer's host, yeah.
Jack Jones has been here for 5 years. DeAndre Pierce has been here for 6 years. I think Todd Heap was his host. I think it's possible that Todd was his host. Evan Fields, 5 years.
He played for Dirk Cutter, yeah.
Okay. You start to look at the experience level that they have. Let's just go to linebackers. Darian Butler, fourth year. Kyle Saw, how do you pronounce his last name? I always get names terrible.
Isn't it Sole?
He's so good.
Oh, Soli.
Soli.
Local kids.
I like So
Connor
Good.
Connor Soli, yeah.
Kyle
yeah.
So
Soli.
Good.
Fifth That's year. Better. Merlin Robertson, who a lot of people thought was going to come out last year and decided to come back. Fourth year, he's been here forever.
He might be the best of anybody on that defense.
He was really great that freshman season. He came back last year, and I mean, he could have went out. Like I said, I think that the feeling at ASU is that they might have 10, 11 guys drafted from this year's class. They may have that many. You go to the defensive line. Matus is in his fourth year. Foreman's in his fifth year. Tyler Johnson, fifth year. They just have so many guys with experience. So I think the loss of Jermaine Lole hurts. He had tricep surgery. I think it'll hurt, but there's still so much experience there that they should be in really, really good shape to do well. Tyler Johnson's a stud.
Yeah.
He's gonna wreak havoc on quarterbacks. He's really good. Davidson, the nose tackle, DJ Davidson, he's been around for a while. Foreman's been around for a while. I mean, it's just loaded with experiences. Why I think that ASU is going to have such a good year this year is you just go, it's not only that they got guys that experience, they've got good players.
Good
their players,
players
are good players.
Yeah. I mean, the secondary, you just read off those totals. So Chase Lucas and DeAndre Pierce are going into their sixth years, Jack Jones and Evan Fields going into their fifth. So just do the math. Those four starters tonight already have 18 years of college experience already. have 18 years between the four of them. Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. And yes, absolutely. To your point, they're not just guys at a small school that have been there and they're wrapping up their career. Some of these guys could have gone to the NFL. I also think it kind of speaks to the bigger idea that this group feels like they have unfinished business. And I do wonder, we were talking about this last night on the virtual series thing with Jordan Simone. That loss to USC last year just absolutely sucked. I mean, just a brutal way to lose to the Trojans, and they continue to have those games over the last couple decades. But if they had won that game, Gambo, they would have finished 3-1. Like, I would much prefer they won the game, don't get me wrong. But I do wonder if that's the sort of game that's going to fuel them this year. Because ultimately, had they won that game last year or not, they only played four games. So it's like, it would have been nice to beat USC, but it's not like that would cost them a trip to the Pac-12 championship. They played any games.
I think that I have a different feeling about last year. I kind of look at last year as just like, man, it's just they were all like exhibition games.
Basically,
yeah. It was all just, we're just playing some exhibition games, see how it goes. I don't think that those games, now look, I mean, they weren't going to have any special season because of COVID and because of limited games that they played. But that's how I kind of looked at it. When I looked at the games against USC, and they should have beat USC, right? I mean, they should have beat UCLA. I mean, that was an ugly game, and they got down 17-0, and then they eventually, you know, ended up taking the lead in that game. They got off to a slow start. They're down 17-0, and all of a sudden they get back in it at 17-3, and then they dominated most of the second half, but they just made dumb plays. So they started off 0-2 for the first time since 1998, I think, was the last time that they started off 0-2. Chase Lucas's first year, 1998. Yeah, so, but they had their chances to win that game against UCLA. They should have won the USC game. I think they even had the lead against UCLA at one point, like 18-17. They ended up losing that game 25-18. It was just an ugly game. They didn't play well. So you take away, you know, you go back and look at those games, you could obviously make an argument that they should have won both of those games. They should have won the USC game. It was an unbelievable comeback. It was crazy that they lost that game. I mean, you know, they had that lead by two scores, and they somehow blew that game. That should have never happened. And
within,
UCLA,
like, the last 2 minutes, too. We're not talking about, like, oh, the fourth quarter got away from them. Like, the last 2 minutes, they were up by two scores.
Yeah. That's what happened. I mean, it was a sloppy game. I mean, Slovis threw a touchdown pass to that Amon Ray St. Brown. He tipped the ball into the hands of some other player, and they caught a touchdown, and you know, all of a sudden, at the Sun Devils' lead, they were up by like 27-14. It was like 27-21.
Mm-hmm.
So USC came, you know, and then they had USC lined up for this desperation onside kick with like 2.5 minutes left. They're down six, no timeouts, and they end up getting the onside kick. You know, they get the onside kick. So just things really broke for USC in that game. And then UCLA, they came out of the gate sloppy, and they lost the game. Write those games off. They were like exhibition games. This is the season for ASU. Almost everybody's back. They're loaded. They're experienced. They should be able to have a great year this year. If they don't, like we talked about it yesterday, Chase Lucas was talking with Jaden Daniels and said, hey, my God, if we don't win it, will an ASU team ever win it? Said something like that. Remember that?
Yeah, he was, if not now, when?
If basically. Not now, when? Yeah, if not now, when? I agree. Like, if not now, when?
I do, too. And I just wonder, I mean, when ASU plays USC this year, if they take, because I completely agree. It's basically, you know, sort of where I was going with that is if you win that game over USC last year, it's great in the moment, but it doesn't do anything for you big picture because it wasn't a normal season. I do wonder if losing that game sort of fuels them or sort of drove some of these guys to come back for the season, guys that maybe could have gone to the NFL. And I'm very obviously interested in seeing what happens when ASU plays USC this year, because we left out the fact that touchdown that Bruno McCoy caught with 2:52 left, that was on 4th-and-13. I mean, it was basically like just a prayer by USC just to keep that drive going. And then, yeah, I mean, so it was a painful loss, but ultimately really didn't mean that much. Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android, and you'll never miss any of the show. It's the Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. When we come back, the Cardinals, will they have some cap space flexibility throughout the season? Is there maybe one or two players they could specifically be targeting? We'll get into that next. It's Burns and Gambo on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Okay, Gambo, here's one for you.
Yeah.
Story on Revenge of the Birds, talking about the Cardinals and potential money that they still have, and they reference Steve Keim, and it's called Keim's Cool, $11.2 million. They spelled it with a K, too, just to really go with the alliteration.
Keim's Cool, 11.2?
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's with Malcolm Butler being off the team now, right?
Yes.
That's what it comes to, $11.2
million? Yeah.
Okay.
So they kind of went through some different things you can do with that money. Do you roll
some
of it over?
There's a lot you could do with $11.2 million.
Yeah.
You could buy a villa in Italy.
You could. I don't know if that's going to help their secondary, but maybe.
Yeah. Just, you know, love it. I don't even know if that would count on a salary cap for you.
Probably not.
Listen, there's a lot of teams have cap space right now. I mean, you look around the league. The Jaguars have $34 million in cap space. The Carolina's got $27 million. Denver's got $23 million. The average amount of cap space right now for every team in the NFL, the average, $10.6 million.
So they're right there.
They're right there. They're right around the average. This happens. Teams don't use up, you know, most teams don't use up every single dollar. Now, there are some teams, if you look at the NFC West, the Rams have $4 million in cap space right now. The 49ers have $5.1 million in cap space right now. And Seattle's got $11 million. So Seattle and Arizona both have the same amount of money. So you ask, well, what can you do with that money? Well, you could extend players, like you could extend your own guys. You could carry some of that money over. You always have to leave a certain amount of money for injured guys.
Yeah.
You know, usually that's $2.5 to $3.5 million you just, you know, save. So that way you could bring in, you know, guys and pay them if you've got to bring in a couple guys on minimums and things like that. So you always have to save some of that money for like injured guys. So that gets saved. The rest of it, I don't know. Like, you know, people have, and I think in this article, they bring up a possible trade, right?
Yeah. They suggest Bradley Roby, who, first of all, he checks the box of he's a corner, he's a vet, he's been pretty good in this league. He plays for Houston. So, I mean, if he's good and he's on Houston, you figure eventually he's going to end up on the Cardinals anyway.
Yes.
But they suggest a potential trade for him, which would then ultimately cost you about $8 million. The one thing I did like, and they referenced this, Bradley Roby has played for Vance Joseph before in Denver.
Yes.
So there's that familiarity we were talking about earlier in the week.
He's also suspended right now.
He is. One more game of the PED suspension.
Yeah.
So you do have to deal with that. And it's not, they're not saying like this is imminent. But it was an interesting name to throw out there because it does check a lot of boxes you'd be looking for a guy that might be able to come in and contribute pretty quickly.
I'm not going to say no to that. I mean, that's, you know, you're not going to have him for the first game. If you did make a trade, what's his salary right now?
I think they said it would be about like an $8
million hit.
$8
million
hit.
So, and the Cardinals have 11.2. It would still leave them with enough money, you know, for injured guys. Now, he was placed on the COVID list earlier in camp, and then he had a concussion late in camp. I know he did not play against Tampa Bay because he had a concussion. And again, he had some COVID issues as well. It's an interesting thought. I'm not going to, you know, say no to that. I don't know if they would do it or not, but
you figure
it's
Houston,
something you got, it's something that you probably kick the tires on.
Houston's the sort of team that just, based on where they are, I mean, they're pretty clearly the worst team in the NFL going into the season. Anybody like that, if you want to make a trade with Houston, they're probably not. There's not anybody on that team with like, no, we're not dealing this guy. And then also your history with Houston, unless we're at a point where the Texans just don't answer the phone when Steve Keim calls. That might be a thing. They might just be like, no, we're not.
Yeah.
We're going to lose something if we answer this phone.
I know. Imagine like, God, and again, imagine getting another guy from Houston. No, I think you have to do your homework on the 6-game PED suspension.
Yeah.
Like you have to find out what happened and why, and you know you have to learn all you can about the PED suspension. He was suspended for 6 games. He missed 5, and he'll miss one more game this year. But that gave him some time off, gave him a chance to rest. He didn't have to put his body through a whole lot, so you know he didn't have to go play all 16 games. So that's, I mean, that you can look at that and say it's a positive. As far as a player's concerned, he's a good player. Like, nobody's knocking that. He's a good player. You know, he's a solid player that would help this team as, you know, obviously one of the top 4 cornerbacks that they were able to make a trade from.
Yeah, they referenced a couple. His Pro Football Focus overall grades the last couple of years, right around 70, 72 last year.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good player. He's a good player. He's not, you know, he's not your number one or number two back, but he's a solid player. I mean, it's, you got to look at all of these things. Now, you know, we reported yesterday what they were going to do, and they added 2 veteran players, obviously, and, you know, those guys will be on the practice squad, but could be flexed to play in the regular season. But I don't think you stop looking if you're Steve Keim. I don't think you stop looking. I think you're still looking, you know, what's out there? Is there any trades that could be made? And if something does pop up, you do have the cap space to do it. I don't know what they're going to do with the $11 million. You could carry some of it over. You could extend guys that you like if you want to do that. But you do have to save some for injuries, somewhere around $2.5 to $3.5 million you have to save for injuries, so you can't spend it all.
Yeah, you got to have some of that flexibility. But I think most Cardinals fans are sort of coming to the they're just making peace with the idea that that corner position is going to kind of be one that's in flux all season. And even if Marco Wilson is amazing as a rookie and Byron Murphy has taken that next step and Robert Alford stays healthy, that's still just three guys. And that's a lot of ifs even to get to three guys. And yeah, you could add a couple vets yesterday that should be solid pieces. But if you could go out and get a guy like this, it's like, okay, this player would contribute as a starter at a position to maybe kind of start to offset the loss of Malcolm Butler.
Yeah. You know, every time I look at a player that becomes available, you always put it in there. Man, what about the – I was reading a story today about, you know, now that Zach Ertz is going to stay in Philadelphia, what about Dallas Goedert? You know, what about him? Would they trade him? You know, he was the number 49 overall pick in the 2018 draft, and – Peterson loved him, but you know, now with that Ertz is back and he's making all that money, you know, with the general manager Howie Roseman decide to move him. And so anytime a tight end comes up, you think, oh, would the Cardinals make a move for a tight end? And you know, they've got the money if they want to make a trade. If there's something that they feel that they need and they want to do before the season starts, they're in a position they have to do it. But again, it's not like they have any more money than anybody else. There's plenty of teams that have a lot more money than them. Like I said, the Jaguars are $34 million. Carolina's at $27 million. Denver's at $23 million. The average cap space is about $10.6 million right now. When you say what's the average cap space available? Mm-hmm. Not everybody spends all their money. Teams you save some for injured guys. Sometimes you carry some of it over. Sometimes you save it because you want to extend some of your own guys and you want to use that to can extend a guy now and use some of that, and that will help me for next year if I use some of that now for an extended guy. So that's what teams like to do.
Well, I mean, like, it seems like Jacksonville is not going to go out probably and spend much of that cap space because they don't really care about this year. They care about developing Trevor Lawrence, and I'm sure they cared about developing Travis Etienne, but he's hurt already and done for the year. So they are 100% in on next year. But it's good context to know basically what the Cardinals have is basically league average in terms of cap space. But they have a need, and a lot of teams have a need. But I think the Cardinals are in that they're in the middle of the Venn diagram in that they are a team that has a pretty glaring need, but they also have legitimate playoff aspirations. Like it's not crazy at all to think this should be a playoff team. And so they may be more likely to spend some of that money.
Yeah, I think teams are looking at, you know, Marco Wilson and like, okay, he's a rookie, he did good, but what's he going to do out there? You like Byron Murphy? You know, Tay Gowan is a completely inexperienced. Robert Alford hasn't seen the field since 2018. I get it. Like, I get it. I mean, I get it. There's, you know, if there's veteran, you know, cornerbacks available, it was another name that kept coming up, the Bryce Callahan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was another name that came up, the Broncos cornerback. That, you know, monitor him. Could be a trade coming. The Bears are interested in him, and the Jets GM was Chicago's director of college scouting when he signed as an undrafted free agent, and that's a player that you might. So every time you get a name like that, it's obviously to look and see if the Cardinals would have any interest in a guy like that.
I was looking at one of the Pro Football Focus stories, and they were going through the highest and lowest graded rookies on each team, and obviously the highest graded Cardinals rookie is Marco Wilson because he had a good preseason. But they pointed out in there, him playing at a high level was never an issue in college. The question was always consistency, and that's going to be a huge deal because they are the NFL team that drafted him is relying on his consistency starting in 9 days. You know, so that's if you could get him a little bit of help, that's probably a good move. Even if he's outstanding as a rookie, consistency is an issue for almost every rookie, isn't it? You're even just jumping from playing 12 games to 17.
Yeah, listen, there's going to be growing pains. There was with Byron Murphy. Gave up a lot of yards. He gave up a bunch of touchdowns. He did the best he could. He's really good now, but they threw him to the wind. That was the year Patrick Peterson was suspended for 6 games, and he had to play, and he had to play right away. And teams target you. They're going to target Marco Wilson until he proves that he doesn't need to be targeted. I think they may even go after Robert Alford a little bit because he hasn't played in a couple of years. You know, and Byron Murphy, like, you know, there was a lot of talk like, you know, Byron Murphy may be your number one cornerback right now. Coming in, you were wondering if he was going to be a slot cornerback or an outside guy. It wasn't proof of that he was going to be your number one guy. I think he's very capable of it. I think it's going to end up being a great draft pick by them because I think he's real solid. But there are still question marks at cornerback, even with the moves they made yesterday.
All right, we come back. We got into a little bit of Patrick Peterson's comments right at the end of the show yesterday, but it turns out we really just
This Patrick Peterson's a trip, man.
We barely scratched the surface.
He is a trip.
So we're going to go deeper when we come back. It's the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The All Things Covered podcast. Gambo, it's the best. He has he could call it the Pat Pete Pod. He could have called it the Pete Cast, the Pat Cast.
All things covered except opposing wide receivers. That's what I'd like to go. Oh, everybody's laughing at that one. All things covered except the opposing wide receiver. We can't cover that guy.
Yikes.
We'll cover any topics, but I'm not going to cover anybody. I've got a guy out there in wide receivers and running backs.
You can't expect me to be good at my job in football and my job in podcasting at the same time.
A lot to ask.
One or the other.
Yeah.
The football one.
Yeah, he's better at the podcast than he is at covering guys. I continue to be fascinated by the fact that he doesn't know who he's playing on this schedule. I still think that part of him is in Arizona, believing that he's got to line up and play the Tennessee Titans.
All right. Well, they asked him on the podcast this week, what three teams, Patrick, who plays for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes.
What three teams are you most looking forward to playing this season?
This season is the Steelers. Like I said, I never had the opportunity to beat them. Tennessee Titans. Because they got a stable of horses over there.
I want to
see how we mount up to them. They got a talented, very very talented offense, and I want to see how our defense is going to handle that challenge, and also the Cardinals.
I'm going through the Vikings schedule. I'm checking it twice.
Wait, let me ask you. Here they play the Steelers.
Bengals, Cards, Seattle, Browns, Lions, Panthers, Cowboys, Ravens, Chargers, Packers, 49ers, Lions, Steelers, Bears, Rams.
So one team is missing.
I don't see the Titans. Patrick Peterson is all jacked up to play the Tennessee Titans. You know who does play the Tennessee Titans? The Cardinals.
Yes, they open the season.
Cardinals play the Tennessee Titans. The Minnesota Vikings do not.
So
there you go.
Is he still looking at a Cardinals schedule on his refrigerator? Because he's referenced this before,
he's
right?
He's done this before.
Yeah.
You would think that somebody would correct him.
This is not new. Yeah.
You think that somebody would have made fun of the fact that, hey, you're not playing the Titans. Like, what was it, 2 weeks ago? He said something about playing the
Titans. Three, yeah.
Yeah, okay. You think that somebody would have said something to him? Hey, by the way, dude, you're not playing the Tennessee Titans. That's the Cardinals. But he did it the other day with his podcast.
It's unless he knows what? Something that we don't. Unless he knows it's a Vikings Titans Super Bowl, which I'm pretty confident it's not going to be.
Probs, no.
Pretty sure Kirk Cousins is still Minnesota's quarterback, right?
You like that?
Yeah.
How about them apples?
Sorry, real quick. Do you guys know the Mariah Carey song "Obsessed"? Why you so obsessed with me, boy? I want to know.
I need you to sing the whole thing.
I do not know it. Yeah, if you could sing it, that would be great.
You don't want that, trust me. I'm sure you've heard it, but every single time I hear something about Patrick Peterson and the All Things Covered podcast, I'm not exaggerating. That song just starts playing in my head. Why you so obsessed with me? Because he just cannot let go.
I mean, he's still looking ahead to their first game against Tennessee. That's saying something. They also asked him, hey, you're in Minnesota. Larry Fitzgerald's from Minnesota. What are the chances that Fitz would sign with the Vikings?
Zero.
Zero. You think he's going to call it? He's going to hang it up?
Nah, I honestly don't know, what he's going to do. If he hasn't retired yet, only team I see him playing for is Arizona. I don't see him playing for another team.
But so I don't know if they have room for him out there, though.
No, it can be, obviously, it's a long season, Matt. It's a very long season.
Yeah, yeah.
So
okay.
It could be a time, a point, they may ring him up.
We'll see. That the injuries will occur. We know that much.
You never know. They might give him 12 for a half a season.
Yeah. No question. Knowing him, he'll go get it too. You talk about a man who's just been making money his whole career. He got 14.
$12 million for half a season. That's a pretty good deal if you can get it.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, listen, if there's an injury, maybe they do call Fitz. We don't know. We don't know that. I mean, I think what he said is right. If he's going to play for anybody, it's going to be the Arizona Cardinals. But yeah. Fitz, I think it would take an injury, and it would take Michael Bidwell or Steve Keim calling him up and saying, hey, we've got an injury. We've got to need a wide receiver. You want to come in and play? It might be that's what it may take to happen.
Yeah, we're at that point where, to me, the only way you're going to see Larry Fitzgerald is that scenario you pointed out, and, like, the team's good. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of factors would have to come into play where Fitz maybe does miss it the first couple weeks, and the Cardinals start, like, 4-1, but they have injuries at receiver, and then, yeah, you've got some of that cap space we were just talking about last segment. Maybe they go to him, and they're like, hey, we'll give you $4 million for the rest of the season.
Go to the Pro Bowl Super Bowl one. That's a pretty good one. Here's the guy. This is how much Patrick Peterson really wants to win a Super Bowl. You're going to love this.
Yeah, so he was asked, because, he's been to the Pro Bowl quite a few times, would you give up those for a Super Bowl ring?
I don't think so. Like, I want a ring, God. And obviously I know a lot falls into, getting a ring, but you got to also think, the Pro Bowls, that's an individual accolade, and you always want to put yourself in the best position possible to help the team win ball games. And quite frankly, obviously I know it's a team game, but you also plan for yourself to get those all-pro votes, to get those Pro Bowl votes. Mm-hmm. And everything has to fall in the perfect way for you to win, a ring. I love the grind that I'm on chasing that ring, So I don't think I would give up my Pro Bowls because you say many of them, hell.
Yeah, how many you got to give up?
If I had to give up any of them, I just give up one.
I just can't have respect for a guy that cares. Man, you ask any competitive athlete out there, your ultimate goal is to win the championship.
Yeah.
And he cares more about a Pro Bowl than he does about winning a Super Bowl. A Pro Bowl. It's unbelievable, this guy. Nope, I wouldn't give up my Pro Bowls for a Super Bowl. It is just... I can't imagine that there's other players that would agree with him.
No, and look, I mean, he was here for how long? A decade? I thought he was always pretty well spoken with the media. I want to give him, the benefit of the doubt that he misspoke there, but this is his podcast.
I think he said it before. I think he has said it before. I think, the team goals are not, they're not ultimately his goal, which, lends you to be more of an individual player than a team player. That's a shame. Because, I don't know that... I think if you polled 100 players and you said, that have never won a Super Bowl, and you said, hey, would you give up your Pro Bowl? Would you give up your Pro Bowls to win a Super Bowl? I think 99 of them would say yes.
I didn't even think players really cared about the Pro Bowl. And look, the only way I can defend it is this year. He's definitely not winning a Super Bowl, so maybe he's just focused
nobody watches the Pro Bowl, and everybody watches the Super Bowl.
Yeah, literally everybody.
The hype leading up to the Super Bowl, those 2 weeks, you own the planet for the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. You are the center of attention on the planet when you're going to the Super Bowl. Maybe not the planet, but in this country, you are.
Maybe the planet. Don't you think Tom Brady, what's he won, 7 rings? I've genuinely lost count. He would give up every individual accolade he has for an 8th
Super
Bowl ring.
That's not even a question. But that's a true winner. I mean, I think that goes to show you the type of character Patrick Peterson is.
Well, we got one more from Patrick Peterson. They asked him, hey, are you going to finish your career in Minnesota now that you're here?
We'll see. We'll see, man. I'm on a one-year deal right now. I'm going to give Minnesota all I got. Each and every week, as far as, being a leader, showing up to work every day, showing up to work on Sundays, I'm going to be that guy. Ain't nothing going to be sugarcoated. Ain't nothing going to be, not there. Like, you're going to get the full P2 effect each and every day. Obviously, we'll have to see what happens. New salary cap next year. I'm betting on myself right now, so... And who knows? Highest bidder.
That's all he wants is money. This guy wants money in Pro Bowls, man. Money in Pro Bowls. Not about Super Bowls for Patrick Peterson. Look, I almost want to say, I hope he flops. I do. I hope he flops. And there's a part of me that wants to say, man, don't put him in the Ring of Honor. There's a part of me that wants to say that, but God, man,
he was so good.
He was an 8-time Pro Bowl player when he was here. He was a great player when he was here.
That's better than 8 Super Bowls, Gambo.
Yeah, exactly. 8 Pro Bowls. Yeah, he'd rather have Pro Bowls than Super Bowls. So there's a part of me like, man, just forget about this guy. But it's hard to like, it is hard to look past the accomplishments he had when he was good. When he was a good player here, I mean, he was great.
Oh, he was one of their best players since they got to Arizona.
He was one of the best players they've ever had in the Arizona Cardinals history. He is. He's one of their best players.
Bix Picks is back for the 2021 NFL season.
Oh, who's he got?
Text. Well, I don't know yet.
Is he taking the Vikings or the Titans?
Hopefully he's not taking Southern Utah tonight. That big Titans-Vikings game that's never going to happen. Text Pick to 620-620 to sign up and compete against Dan Bickley for your chance at the grand prize.
I mean, that should be easy when you think about it.
Well, I think you could sign up.
Like, if you can't beat Dan Bickley in picks... I mean, I think that should be pretty easy.
Well, if you want to sign up, you can win a Yeti Tundra cooler and grill courtesy of Modelo Especial. Weekly winners will receive a $100 gift card to Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers. So text Pick to 620-620 to enter. When we come back, the Cardinals are going to be dependent on some rookies. So how did one site rate them in terms of the preseason all-rookie team? That's kind of surprising. That's next. Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Well, we know the Cardinals, they're not going to be the only team dependent on rookies this season. But we know going into week one, they're going to be pretty dependent on three guys. Their first, their second, and their fourth round picks. Obviously, Zaven Collins, Rondale Moore, and maybe more than anybody now, Marco Wilson. So, Gambo, I found it interesting, and you pointed this out before the show, Pro Football Focus put out their preseason all-rookie team.
Preseason all-rookie team, yep.
And I'm reading through, and some of these names are like, you know, big names you expect, like Quiddy Pay, like some of these guys that went pretty high in the draft, Micah Parsons to Dallas.
Well, let's just go over it, right? Okay. Quarterback's Mac Jones.
No shock there. He just won the Patriots starting job.
Yep. He's the guy. So Mac Jones was their pick. So it's not Trevor Lawrence, it's not Zach Wilson, it's Mac Jones.
That's true.
I mean, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I think that they took running backs. They got Ramondre Stevenson for the Patriots.
A lot of Patriots already.
Yeah. Wide receivers. This one was interesting. Wide receiver Terrace Marshall, Carolina. Michael Strachan, Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah. Okay. So not guys that were taken at the top of the draft.
No. Like, that's the thing that you look at the guys that were taken. Where's Jalen Waddle? Where's Jamar Chase?
Yeah.
Where's Devontae Smith? Those guys aren't on it. Now, linebacker, they got Micah Parsons as the linebacker. So I thought it was really interesting that they went with some different guys offensively. They didn't go with the top wide receivers. They didn't go with the top cornerback. They didn't go with the top running back taken. That to me was kind of interesting. When you get to the defense, you're looking to see is Zaven Collins going to be in there? No, their linebackers, they took Micah Parsons from the Cowboys and they took Elijah Sullivan from the 49ers.
Great.
Yeah.
San Francisco gets another defensive player.
Yeah, but they didn't end up going, they didn't end up going with Zaven Collins, who's going to start and play right away. Some people, other people have thought that Zaven Collins could be defensive rookie of the year because, he's going to start. He's going to play right away because they made that decision before they even started practicing.
Yeah, the opportunity is certainly there. And, you mentioned, Zaven Collins didn't make this list. Well, when I started to look at it, I was like, okay, well, obviously Marco Wilson made the list, right? Because they list five corners. They go with two corners, and they go with a nickel as well. And those corners are Nate Hobbs of the Raiders, Patrick Surtain the second out of Denver, which, he was one of the highest rated, and Elijah Molden out of Tennessee. So I don't see Marco Wilson on here either. And I know Pro Football Focus gave him a high grade for the preseason.
Yeah, I don't. So, yeah, the Cardinals are going to be very dependent on rookies this year. We all know that. Rondale Moore is going to play a lot. Marco Wilson is going to play a lot. Zaven Collins is going to play a lot. They're going to be dependent on some key rookies. But it was interesting when Pro Football Focus, we always say we have this love-hate relationship with them. When they did their all-rookie team, you weren't seeing those guys. There are some familiar names on here. Like, they've got Patrick Surtain, the cornerback for the Broncos. They think that he's going to be on the all-rookie team. I mentioned Micah Parsons, the linebacker that went to the Cowboys. They got Quiddy Pay from the Colts. The Cardinals liked him. He went a little bit later in the draft, but the Cardinals did like him. It was the offense was very interesting with some of those names because, they weren't the names that you see at the top of the draft.
No, and I mean, that speaks to it's not like they just went through the draft and were like, hey, here's all the best players, the highest rated players, and as long as they played in the preseason, we put them on this list. Like you said, love, hate with Pro Football Focus, but they stick to their metrics that they have, and their metrics spit out a very interesting offense because there's a lot of guys that weren't taken highly in the draft other than, you know, even Mac Jones. He was taken, 15th, but he was the fifth quarterback off the board. But the defense was a little more, it was Patrick Surtain, it was Kwity Paye, Micah Parsons. Those were guys that were expected to be very good. Again, it's early, it's preseason, but within the context of the Cardinals, you're talking about a team that's very dependent on two rookies, and they're going to need something from that third rookie, Rondale Moore, as well. So to not see any of them on this list was, you at least noticed it.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to have an all-rookie player or not. Look, these guys got to contribute. They got to play. If they get all-rookie honors or anything like that, that's fine. It's just gravy if those guys get it. The biggest key, and I'm going to say it, and I know it's a lot of people think it's Marco Wilson. I still think it's Zaven Collins. I think there's a lot of pressure on Zaven Collins. I think he's almost got more pressure than Marco Wilson. I know people may not believe that because Marco's going to be thrown into that fire right away. But I think Zaven Collins, very, very important for him, calling the defense, being that leader. The great thing about Zaven Collins is he's gone through training camp. There's only three practices left, right? They've gone through training camp. There wasn't anything that stood out as a negative. I mean, he had a really great first camp. He was healthy. He participated well. He learned quickly. The reviews about him are all really, really good. So I feel good about Zaven Collins being able to come in. I mean, even Jordan Hicks said a lot of good things about him. So I think Zaven Collins is going to be able – he's going to have growing pains too, right? He's going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But I think that I'd be surprised if he started and then they had to take him off the field because he wasn't good enough.
Well, I mean, having the basically normal off-season programs and everything that Isaiah Simmons didn't have last year.
Huge.
Because it's easy to just look and say, okay, well, what if he's Isaiah Simmons? I mean, he could be, but Isaiah Simmons, A, they're different people certainly, but also Simmons really did not have that the normal preseason to get ready. Now, some rookies certainly excelled last year, but that was just a tougher position for him for whatever reason. Where I agree with you on the Zaven Collins thing is, I mean, they're both obviously very important, him and Marco Wilson. But like, if Marco Wilson struggles a little bit out of the gate, I think people are going to be a little more lenient on him. He was a fourth-round pick. He wasn't supposed to be thrown into this. Whereas if Collins struggles, he's going to get criticism. Like, on him specifically. It's not going to be, oh, the Cardinals should have done this. It's going to be thrown at Zaven Collins. You were a first-round pick. You knew you were a starter from day one, and they're basically running the middle of their defense through you. So that's where it's like you start talking about the individual criticism a player is going to receive. Collins is going to feel the pressure right out of the
game. The hard part is it's the easiest for Rondale Moore to make the biggest impact.
Yeah.
Like, it makes sense that if mistakes are going to be made, it's more likely going to be Marco Wilson and Zaven Collins.
Yes.
But if somebody's going to contribute, it's a lot easier to pick a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Hey, Rondale Moore, like, he's going to have a lot of catches and break some big runs. And so I think you look at it that way, you say, which guy's going to have the biggest impact? You kind of feel like it's easier for Rondale Moore to have a bigger impact. It's a lot easier for Collins and Marco Wilson to make more mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you're a casual fan watching, you're going to hear more about Marco Wilson when he makes a mistake, and you're going to hear more about Rondale Moore when he catches a 5-yard pass and breaks off a 60-yard run after the catch. I mean, of the three rookies, he's absolutely feeling the least amount of pressure because any attention he gets from the casual fans can be, hey, Rondale Moore, this guy's turning some heads on offense. Whereas Marco Wilson's going to be like, hey, why is this guy out there if he can't cover
somebody? Listen, a number one cornerback, this number two cornerback, they're not covering Rondale Moore.
No.
They're not covering them. Like, you're going to be covering DeAndre Hopkins and A.J. Green. So, I mean, you may get some real favorable matchups with Rondale Moore. With those other guys, I mean, you could see Marco Wilson being targeted right from the get-go. That offensive coordinators are going to target Marco Wilson. Kind of like the first, remember when Brandon Williams?
Oh, don't bring up that
remember
name.
Remember the Patriots game?
Yes, I remember
that. I mean,
game.
Bill Belichick was like, okay, like, all right, you want to play that? All right. I don't care that I got Jimmy Garoppolo as the quarterback. I'm like, Jimmy, with going at that guy, how often, like every single play, just go at him every single play. After that game was over, it's like, oh, okay, he's really not ready to play in the NFL.
And he never was. Sometimes Belichick just does the thing that
it's so obvious.
Yeah.
Captain obvious.
Like, okay, well, you're going to put a corner out there that can't cover my guys. I'll just throw at him all game.
The whole game. Until you take him off the field.
Yeah.
And then after that, Brandon Williams was – it's almost like a fighter getting knocked out. He was never the same after that Patriots
really
game.
Really never was. Really, the Cardinals weren't the same for a while either. All right, we come back. 4 o'clock reset, and ASU starts their season tonight. So how many obstacles are potentially on this road? The Athletic has one very big obstacle that might be out of their control. That's next. It's the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.